Hello and welcome back to America Weekend. I'm Valerie Smaldone. It's always great to be with you. Recently, I had the pleasure of meeting a very interesting and accomplished individual. Dr. Jeffrey Boris is a practicing pediatric cardiologist, also clinical professor of pediatrics at Children's Hospital Philadelphia, and a musician who plays in two rock bands, has won competitions, and now a group, one of his groups, working on their second album to raise funds for pediatric cancer research. Lots going on in your life, Dr. Boris. Welcome to America Weekend.
Thank you so much for having me.
So you and I met at a conference for dysautonomia this past June, and you're an expert in the field of POTS, which falls under the umbrella of dysautonomia. So first, can you give me your clinical explanation of POTS and how you began treating patients with one of these syndromes?
So the postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, or POTS, is a dysautonomia. A dysautonomia is a severe malfunction of the autonomic nervous system, the part of the nervous system that controls heart rate, blood pressure, GI motility, and things like that. And as I tell the patients, the autonomic nervous system is the thing that says, well, if you're going to go to exercise, you don't have to manually tell yourself to increase your heart rate and blood pressure. This does it for you. So when patients have POTS, they have a severe disability associated with this. So these patients are often profoundly dizzy, have severe fatigue, what they call brain fog or cognitive dysfunction. But despite their severe fatigue, they also have insomnia. We see headaches and weakness, tachycardia and palpitations, chest pain, joint and muscle pain, and also a lot of gastrointestinal problems, either nausea, constipation, feeling full really early, abdominal pain, that kind of thing. Mm. So these patients can really be overwhelmed by this.
And you treat on the younger scale. Your patients are children and adolescents. What is the youngest patient you have who struggles with this disorder?
So we looked at 482 patients about a year and a half ago in our series. Right now we're over 700. And at that point, the youngest child was 6. The median age for presentation, at least in our clinic, though, was about 15 years old.
Okay. It's a very puzzling circumstance, and it seems like although it's fairly common, it's very much under the radar, this disorder.
It is. It's one of those things that I think is not particularly well taught in medical schools. And part of the reason for that is nobody owns the autonomic nervous system. The autonomic nervous system is affects so many parts of the rest of our body. And yet the neurologists typically don't manage autonomic disorders. And what you see in the field is you see cardiologists doing it, you do see some neurologists, you do see some gastroenterologists, and even some general pediatricians, or in the adult world, internists managing it. What we see that is very frustrating for the patients and families is we'll see one of several things. We'll either say, we'll either see a physician say, I've never heard of it, or they'll say, I've heard of it and I don't believe it exists. Or they'll say, I've heard of it, I do understand that it exists, I don't know anything to do to take care of it. Or they'll say, they won't even think about it, and they'll say, well, I can't find anything wrong with your heart, or I can't find anything wrong with your head, or I can't find anything wrong with your intestines, so it must be an anxiety disorder, or it must be something that the parent, your parents are doing to you, or it must be another psychiatric problem called conversion disorder. So it's very difficult. It's felt to be, if you will, an invisible disease.
Mm-hmm.
So and there's a lot of variability in it. So it can change hour to hour, day to day, week to week, which gets even more problematic for, say, school teachers, parents, friends, because they'll take one look at the child and they'll say, you know, you were fine an hour ago. What's the problem?
Mm-hmm. So how did this become your area of expertise?
I sort of fell into this a number of years ago. The United States Air Force put me through medical school, and so when I was paying the Air Force back as a pediatric cardiologist, 14 and a half years ago, I had a patient come into my office who had severe dizziness and just wasn't responding to the typical therapies. It so happens I'd heard of this POTS thing, and I did a little bit of looking in the medical literature and found a name kept coming up of an adult cardiologist in Ohio who had written a lot of papers on this. So I essentially cold called him. And he spoke with me kindly for 2.5 hours and taught me a lot of things. And so as time has gone on, he continues to teach me things, and I've taught him a couple of things, and it's just progressed from there. When I left the Air Force, I was in private practice for a few years and saw a few patients there. And then when I came up to Philadelphia 8.5 years ago, I told our clinic nurse that I knew how to take care of POTS patients, and her response was, "Are you sure you want to tell me that?" So, and what happened was the practice just grew exponentially from there. My colleagues started referring patients, our headache folks, our gastroenterology folks, our diagnostic center folks, and it got to the point where I was backed out 6 months for new appointments. My administrative assistant was scheduling patients during my administrative time, and I was getting really far behind. And it got to the point where I said, look, you know, I've been practicing pediatric cardiology for about 14, 15 years now. If I do an acute right turn and change my practice, that's fine.
So there you are. It's amazing how life presents interesting challenges and opportunities at the same time.
Absolutely. I think it was one of those things where I love doing pediatric and congenital cardiology, but I felt that I had at least a reasonable skill set in taking care of these patients, and it was just unfair of me to push that away and not take advantage of it.
I'm speaking with Dr. Jeffrey Boris, who is an expert in pediatric and adolescent POTS, a cardiologist, and a clinical professor. So are you currently teaching as well?
I am. I give lectures at the nursing school at the University of Pennsylvania. I also teach our pediatric cardiology fellows of the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, as well as our general pediatric residents. And I have given a few talks around the country and at various conferences.
And let's not forget one other fun fact about Dr. Boris. You are a musician and, in fact, perform in two bands. You play several instruments. How do you have the time to practice, rehearse, and perform?
What's practice? No, it's one of those things where you sort of make the time. The two bands that I'm in, though, are very different. One of them is a sort of an eclectic band made up of pediatric cardiologists, pediatric cardiac surgeons, pediatric cardiac nurses, and other pediatric specialists, and then a few ringers as well. And we typically play at medical conferences, although we have done several special occasions and events. And what we do is we'll come up with a song list ahead of time, and we will practice our parts at home, and then we will meet and practice intensively for 3 to 4 days prior to the show and make sure that we have everything down. So that's that group. The other group that I'm in is a jazz trio, and all of us live here in the Philadelphia area. So, you know, we'll get together once or twice a month at the drummer's house and play for 2 or 3 hours and just have a good time. So it's doable, really.
Fantastic. And it's a great other side of your brain that you're nurturing as well as a scientific side of your brain. So you are working on a second album. It's coming out hopefully in the beginning of the year for a fundraiser.
It is. At least we hope so. The larger band that I'm in, called the Baby Blue Sound Collective, as I mentioned, does really eclectic music. We do rock, blues, jazz, show tunes, singer-songwriter, funk, and a number of our other musicians and members of the band do a fair bit of writing, so we're doing a lot of original tunes. This album we hope to have out actually by Christmas, and also to have out in time for a fundraiser for the Children's Heart Foundation, which is a pediatric and congenital heart disease support group for patients and families. And their gala fundraiser is in February. So they were kind enough to support us going into the studio and defraying some of the costs for this album. And so we are going to be returning any proceeds from this album to them.
Fantastic. Well, Dr. Boris, thank you for joining us on America Weekend.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Dr. Jeffrey Boris, expert in POTS for children and adolescents, clinical professor, cardiologist, rock star. I'm Valerie Smaldone on the Envision Radio Network.
Cheap Psych Tricks with Dr. Buff.
And Dr. Buff here. Got a kid who's pushing your buttons, too much arguing? Well, let's just cut to the chase on this one. Arguing with children does very little. And when both parties raise their voice, well, children look disrespectful and parents feel out of control. Here's the social science of it.
It's a family affair.
To avoid arguing with children, try this simple technique. Instead of raising your voice, consciously lower it. Give the child direct eye contact, state your case firmly, and use a low tone of voice. Hold your position, and if the arguing escalates along with emotions, postpone the discussion until you and your child regain control. What's the cheap psychological trick? Is there ever a time to argue with your children? Never, never, never. More info at drbuff.com.
Just because you don't have time to read a book doesn't mean you can't enjoy stories about artists and groups that you love. To discover a whole new world of audiobooks and hear the stories that made the music, visit happylandaudio.com. That's happylandaudio.com.
Order in the court.
This is attorney Jay Coleman with The Final Verdict. Recently, police were using mounted patrols to help control crowds at an event in St. Petersburg, Florida. During the event, 29-year-old Stephanie Smith was arrested for slapping a police horse, and she was taken to jail. But how is slapping a horse a crime? The final verdict after this.
Just because you don't have time to read a book doesn't mean you can't enjoy stories about artists and groups that you love. To discover a whole new world of audiobooks and hear the stories that made the music, visit happylandaudio.com. That's happylandaudio.com.
In many states, a person who intentionally strikes or causes harm to a police dog or police horse commits a first-degree misdemeanor. Stephanie Smith was charged with battery on a police horse. And that's the final verdict.